Hello everyone, welcome to another exciting adventure in the video game world. It's ARG Presents. I'm your boy, Amigo Aaron, joined by a man who, much like many of the games on today's subject matter, is made from cheap foreign animation. I give you the Brent. Yep, there it goes. Clearly, very cheap. How are you today, big man?
I am well. How about yourself?
I'm beat down. I'm beat down, but I'm here. I can't stop. I won't stop. So, if you tuned in last week, we spun the wheel. We made the exciting deal. It was another two in a row Retro Rewind as we pulled up good old-fashioned, one of our favorites, bam, it's a Laserdisc Arcade, Brent.
Yes.
Another round of Laserdisc games. Now, you'll recall the last time we did Laserdisc games, Brent, can you remember the subject matter of that particular show?
I know I did Time Travelers.
And I think I did Esh's Amarilla, which
I'm actually really glad we got a chance to come back to these because we did very storybook games before, interactive movies, as some people like to call them. And this week, we're taking a look at the other side where they tried to use the Laserdisc footage and make, you know, a more traditional playable game.
That's right. That's right. We tried to... I don't think, once again, we didn't talk about what we were going to play beforehand. We both ended up playing games that sort of cover the other aspects of Laserdisc arcade games, which were, games that had animation or live footage in the background when they tried to overlay something that resembled gameplay.
Yes.
You know, which is, you know, pretty neat. Laserdisc games really do run the gambit, Brent, in terms of what they tried to do. But they weren't exactly successful most of the time. It's funny, I was looking at a list of the dates that the games were released. And if you look at how they were released, they really were trying different stuff pretty much right out of the gate. You had the first round of games in 83, you had your Dragon's Lairs, your Space Aces. But you also had your Astron Belts, a game like Cobra Command. Astron Belt was a game where you laid footage over top of footage from various movies. And then you had your Cobra Command, which sort of mixed the two ideas. It was footage of air combat that you sort of kind of flew the chopper, but not really. You remember that one?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Good game, but not great. Then when 84 rolls in, 85, they've mostly given up on that concept for these couple years, and you're going straight up Dragon Slayer ripoff style stuff. You got Super Don Quixote, Road Blasters, Thayer's Quest. And then when you get up into the later eras of your laser games, towards 90, you get the games where American Laserdisc games did stuff like the Mad Dog McCrae's, those sorts of games where you actually, once again, change the gameplay up to where you're doing shooting the screen in sort of a duel type thing. And those, I think those were probably some of the most playable ones. Wouldn't you agree on that?
As playable as Laserdisc got, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. right off the top of your head, I'm going to come to call you on the carpet here. Do you think there's a Laserdisc game that it comes anywhere near other normal games in terms of gameplay? I mean, do you think there's one that's at the tippity top of the list?
Gun games.
You know,
the Dog McCree type stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The problem with the Laserdisc genre, the technology, the gameplay was so limited that I think they almost ran out of ideas. I mean, you can also think that this is coming from an era where people were very clever in this era of video games. So it's hard to be super clever with a Laserdisc. The technology is just limiting, to say the least. But we have our favorites. It's funny, I'm drawn back to these games over and over, despite their limited appeal, just because of, I don't know, maybe I grew up with them. This is a genre that I think younger people don't get. Have you ever had that feeling?
Well, here's the reason. Obviously, these games were all about their graphic, right? I think
yes.
We can both agree with that.
That's what
made them stand out. So that's what really makes it hard for people to go back who've never didn't grow up with this stuff to say, man, that looks awesome, because it doesn't really look awesome anymore. It looks like low-res video when people have 4K, looks just as good as live video gameplay now.
Yeah, You got a point there. You know, when you do you remember the first time you got to play these at home, like any of these games? I mean, what was the
first, Amiga?
What I mean, really, so the Dragon Slayer for the Amiga was the first time you.
Absolutely.
That was an unbelievable moment when you first boot those up, isn't it?
Absolutely.
We were both big fans of Dragon Slayer and Space Ace, and I mean, granted, the Amiga versions were quite limited. Do you remember the first time you actually tried one of the CD versions, like especially over the PC? Was it also Dragon's Lair?
I would have said my first one would have been Dragon's Lair. That was a DVD that you played with a television.
Oh yeah, how did that play? I remember those.
Yeah, they were horrible.
They were. It was at the seat time that was so slow in the DVD player.
Yeah, the transitions. And if we had better DVD player back in the time, it would have probably been okay.
Yeah,
but. Going from scene to scene after you do your action was so slow that it just killed the fluidness of it.
You know, it's funny. Eventually, they ended up releasing a couple really good high-def versions of some of these games. I know I have Dragon's Lair for the Wii, and it's like they turned it widescreen and high-def. They did a great job, so it's kind of neat that some of these sort of made the transition. But I don't think you're going to see the majority of these making the transition to a more modern aspect ratio or definition with stuff like Cliffhanger.
I don't think we'll see those again.
So, with all that being said, this time around, we took a look at a couple different types of glitches in this game. Of course, we didn't talk ahead of time. It's funny, we both went sort of in the same direction. Brent, I'm going to take the leadoff spot this week with my offering, and I went with an old favorite of mine, and that one is Mach 3. Mach 3, an interesting game, and I'm going to answer my own question from earlier. I'm going to make the argument here that this is the best laziness game ever released. And certainly, when I say that, I mean by gameplay-wise, it's the most playable laziness game ever released, in my opinion. This game released in 1983. Manufactured by Milestar, Brent. This is a game that has a pedigree of the people that worked on it. Gottlieb had a lot of interest in this game, and they contributed some of the people that worked on it. So, this was programmed by a fellow named Chris Brewer. The video graphics are done by a guy named Jeff Lee. Jeff Lee worked on a lot of games you may have heard of, including Crawl, Mad Planets, Cubert, Road Rash 3D, and Us Versus Them, which is another laziness game. Sound was done by a fellow named David Thiel, who worked on, among other things, one of my personal favorites, Time Killers. He worked on the sound of that. He also worked on the sound on Cubert, Crawl. He worked on the sound for Golden Tee Golf 1 and 2. So he worked on a lot of really good games. And the cabinet graphics were done by a fellow named Terry Dozerzaff. He worked on Cubert, Mad Planets. Plus, he worked on the Pinball Machine Haunted House and Black Hole. So you see, this game had an interesting mix of people from the pinball world and the sort of the more traditional arcade world that came in to work on it. So I think, and of course, part of the appeal of this game is the cabinets, which we'll get to here. So what is Mach 3? You take control of a jet fighter, and you're basically tasked with going through these sorties, these missions. This game presents you with two options when it comes to gameplay. You get a bombing option, and you get a sort of a third-person perspective flight option where you're behind the jet as it flies, and it gives it really, it's almost like two different games, to be honest with you. I mean, it really is. So we'll talk about the bombing section of this first. What they did was Clay Lacy shot the footage for this game. They basically tied a camera to a plane and flew it over different parts different areas and filmed it, and they took this high definition footage and then they overlaid your jet on top of it, along with all the other things you see. So everything on top of the footage is graphics. What the result of this is, and this is what makes the game so playable, is they use sort of a heads-up display to make it look like you're targeting different areas on the ground. And they actually do a good job of putting the heads-up display over things that look like targets. You're going to come across like chemical plants, boats. They fly over like a naval yard, a dock. They fly over all kinds of stuff that you can blow up, bridges, highways, buildings. And they overlay what looks like a heads-up display that's basically telling you to bomb here. On top of the bombing, you're also shooting while you're flying. And so at the top of the screen, when an enemy is getting ready to come on the screen, there'll be a flash. Again, it looks like a heads-up display telling you that something's coming and you need to get ready to shoot it. And then planes will come flying through there that you have to avoid or shoot. And the effect of this is pretty cool. They overlay the sound with like radio chatter. So you sort of feel like you're actually flying like some sort of sortie. There's a vagary as to who you are, who you're bombing, and what the mission is. Basically, blow up everything they say is pretty much the mission.
Yeah.
You know, you also fly over like an airfield. It's really, the footage they got was target rich, wasn't it, Brent? I mean, there were plenty of stuff that you could blow up, and it looks good.
For the bombing run, especially, yeah.
The plane feels good. It's responsive. Now, it's not perfect. What you've got amongst the obstacles you have to avoid are these missiles that shoot from behind you. They can be real difficult to avoid because they're coming from behind, and you don't get a visual notification that they're coming. You also have to avoid like ground-to-air fire, and that can also be difficult. But what's neat about that is they've actually, the ground-to-air fire is done in a way that it looks like it's coming from the potential targets that you see. So, like, if you're coming across, like, an aircraft carrier, you're going to notice more ground-to-air, fire because you're over something that could conceivably shoot you from the ground, which I thought was pretty slick. Overlays, the video overlays look pretty good most of the time. They generally look like they're over a proper target, and so that makes that gives it some realism to it. When you blow something up, they overlay an explosion, which is also really cool. You get that aspect of it. I think it's a really interesting look. What do you think, Brent?
So I definitely think the bomber part of this game is the best of the two modes, and I know you're going to talk about the other one here in a second. The footage is interesting. The game is not nearly as cheap as the other mode. Having indicators when the planes are going to come up was a really good idea. It gives you a little bit of foresight that you would have if you were in a plane like this. Also, the missiles that come up from the back, they're fairly rare. They're not a huge part of the game. The planes that come down will actually try to loop behind you and shoot you in the back. So that's kind of cool. And then the footage that you're actually bombing feels like you're bombing, like you said before, actual target. Most of them are either factories or chemical plants or rail yards or shipping depots, that kind of stuff. The boats, when you're bombing the boats, a lot of them look like military-style boats. So the footage with the gameplay on this, very spot on. This was definitely my favorite way to play this. And I didn't get through the game because it gets ridiculously difficult. But I did watch through the game. And one thing I don't understand why they did was they go into a radiation field where they screw with the visuals a lot. Unnecessary. I think they were just saying they just wanted to have something different, and I can salute that. I can understand it. I don't think that was the right thing to do. Also, why would you bomb stuff that's already irradiated? I mean, they're already dead.
It could be like nuclear power plants. Some. I like the fact that they put the radiation symbols on the HUD because that makes it feel like that differentiates some of the targets. You know, this game's all about illusion. You know, this particular part of, and they, I thought they did a good job. I like the fact that they sort of differentiated the targets between different types of, you know, that way it felt more like a realistic HUD would look. Like you could almost see this sort of like heads up display in an actual bomber, and it would make sense, in real life. That's what made it cool. You know,
now all of that said, the actual gameplay element of shooting and flying and bombing are so. I didn't feel like I had great control over where my bombs were going. I never felt like, sometimes I would hit targets that I was nowhere near. Sometimes I would miss targets that I hit square in the middle of the box.
Yeah.
So
the illusion's not perfect.
No, it's not.
Because what they're doing is effectively matching footage up and trying to hold a a graphic over it as it moves. And so it's not what I would call 100% perfect. This is one game I've noticed that on the actual machine, the graphic is better than it is on in the emulation. They believe it or not, they stay closer. And I think part of that's because of the way that it's tuned for the way the discs play in this. But that's, and I remember having trouble with Daphne back in the day where these targets would be way off, you know, so that definitely Daphne can cause some issues with this, Daphne being the emulator for these games. But for the sure. most part, they've perfected it over the last couple of years to where it's pretty good.
Now, one thing I want to note, just since you kind of brought it up, the way they track the targets in this is basically what I do for our outro now, for the supporter video, yeah. where they are locking onto a piece of the footage and then tagging it and having that target stay with it is basically what I do for the closing credits.
Right.
So I could at least do that part of the game.
I will say that's I never thought about that. That's kind of neat. One thing about this game is you could literally take the video footage out and you could still play the game. Would that game?
But you wouldn't.
That game be fun? No.
No. Absolutely not.
The video footage makes this game tick, and that's what's fun about it. So that's your bombing portion of the game. Now you've also got the other aspect of the game, and you picked this at the beginning of the game. When you put your money in, you can pick which game you want to play. The other game is sort of this third-person, behind-the-jet, straightforward game. Now, this is a whole different kettle of fish here, but it's a much. This one plays a lot faster. This is more of like an action, super action game than the bombing missions, in my opinion. And this one sees your guy, your jet, rolling through across land, sort of at a low altitude, going through like almost looks like the desert, like Monument Valley, and going through targets that are more of a deserty type. There's you'll go and bomb, you go through mountains, canyons. There's a place where you shoot up a dam. You know, it's a very the footage is awesome. And in this version, it's sort of the similar situation. You're playing in front of shot footage, but this stuff is coming straight on at you, as opposed to you coming up from the ground or from the top. When you play this version, you have guns and missiles. You again have targets that will be sort of ground-based, and you've also got mostly aircraft and stuff. The main nemesis in this are these ground-to-air missiles. These things, and I know when you said you didn't like this version, I know that's why. These ground-to-air missiles are tough to avoid. They're heat seekers, man, and they will follow you all over the screen, and they'll shoot them in bunches. You could get two or three that are coming, but they're not coming all at once. They're sort of staggered. But you're forever juking and jiving your way through this level, trying to get past it. This is a level I've never actually gotten to the end of, but I had to watch the ending, and I've actually gotten to the end of the bomber level before. And this I found this really tough. But you do get a different sense of speed playing this version than you did playing the other version. I mean, you're really rocketing through these canyons and stuff. It uses the same heads-up display targeting that you got on the first one. This one's also identifying more military-type targets on, like, canyon walls and on mountains that are trying to shoot you. It sort of tells you like where the missiles are coming from. You also will have, like, stuff to shoot from you, like it's like helicopters and whatnot that come up. What did you think of this version of the game? I have a feeling I already know what you thought, but what did you think of it?
Well, while the flying version, as opposed to the bombing version, is visually more appealing, that is literally the only part. And I don't even know if it's visually more appealing. The targets are, the HUD targets are over top of nothing. It would just say, oh, there's a gun here, trust it. You just can't see it. The scene transitions are way too frequent, and
they're jarring.
They're not blended at all. The missiles that you were talking about are the cheapest thing I've ever seen. And I guarantee you they had people playing it and they were like, well, crap, this is too easy. People are doing too well. We'll show them because the missiles are nigh on unavoidable. And they stay on the screen forever. You can fly them in a circle for like 15 seconds before they'll eventually explode on their own. completely ridiculous, completely destroys this version of the game for me.
Yeah, they're tough. I mean, the thing is that you can wiggle out of the way of them, but they come. There's so many that you may avoid six, but the seventh one's still coming. You know, and that's the one that gets you. And so that does take away from it quite a bit. I'll grant you.
And also, while you're dodging so much, trying to hit targets is impossible. You're basically just firing. You're holding the fire button down while you're moving around the screen and hoping things line up. You can't, unlike the bomber version, you can't take time to line up a shot. Even if it's, you know, you might feel like you hit that shot and it didn't count it. On the shooting version, the flying version, there is no lining up your shot. You're dodging missiles almost continuous. Another thing about the flying version that I did not like, the canyon scenes were awesome.
Yeah.
When you're flying into the canyons, And it's kind of, you know, you're going in and out and side to side and that kind of stuff. That footage is great. Great sense of speed. Occasionally he'll do a barrel roll and he'll rotate the screen. That's pretty neat. However, there are tons of points during this level where you're just flying over desert. Flat, boring desert.
Yeah.
There's really nothing interesting to look at all. And again, it just has, you know, here's a HUD shot. Here's a HUD shot. There's nothing actually on the footage to shoot. It just says there is. So I think, personally, the flying part, big thumbs down. As much as I enjoyed the bombing part is how much I didn't like the flying part.
Let me ask
which
you.
Was your favorite
you,
of the two?
Did you get the feeling that any of the targets you shot and could make it so they, like, they will show you the outline of guns and tanks and whatnot? Did you get the feeling that if you shot that stuff quick enough that you would not have to face some of the fire? That's one thing.
No.
I think that would have been a kind of a neat aspect of the game. If they had made it so if you shot this stuff quick enough, then you're not gonna get the missiles or something like that. And so that you could have lessened the amount of them. I think that would have been a big help for this one.
The problem is you'd have to memorize, even if that was true, and I don't think it is. I think the anti-air fires, no matter what.
I think you're right, because, I mean, I for some of this canyon, I kind of memorized where all the guns and stuff are, and it's still, they still, there's still tons and tons of those heat.
Yeah, and even, like I said, was going to say, even if it did, you shot, and then those missiles didn't fire out, as soon as you let one go, you have to dodge so much to avoid the next one. You would never have a walk onto a pattern.
Did you do the same thing I do, which is just hit both buttons all the time?
pretty much.
The instructions say you can only have four missiles on the screen at once, but that didn't stop me. I just pounded both buttons the entire game. It's always the way I played it.
On the shooting game, you almost have to.
Yeah.
On the bombing game, I actually tried to line up my shot. Because I felt like I had more control.
Yeah.
But on the flying straight shooting portions, no, you just hit your buttons and hope for the best.
I think this is the weaker of the two. I always pick the other one, but I do like this one. I think it's a nice change of pace, and it's the footage of it is awesome. So I think we can both agree on that. And I will say if they'd lessened the missiles, the way the plane moves and stuff, it looks very realistic, I thought. Didn't you? I mean, if you take out some of the stuff you didn't like, it looks good.
Yes. Yeah. It looks very afterburner-ish.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. That. Just to kind of clean up shop here, again, this was released in September of 83, and they shipped 5,600 units on this. It came in an upright.
Wow.
And it also came in a cockpit. Now, I'll tell you, the sit-down version was awesome. They had it at our local Hills. And I remember playing it. I remember walking in and seeing this thing. I'm like, holy smokes, look at this. And you sit down in the cockpit of this thing. I mean, it is the bomb. It's a great feeling. It had really good sound. And, I mean, it was awesome. Awesome in the cockpit version. I'm not sure I ever saw the stand-up version. Did you, Brent? Do you remember seeing the stand-up?
I remember playing the one at Hills.
Yeah.
Just like you. I think that's the only place I've ever saw this.
So when this came out, it was actually pretty well received. Aside from the fact that you had a lot of the guys from Gottlieb working on it, they had a good rep. It ended up doing pretty well out in the field. Game Machine listed Mach 3 on their March 15th, 84 issue as being the second most successful upright arcade game of the year. Pretty good. And Mach 3 was one of the few laziest games that made its way to the number one position in Replay Magazine's Player's Choice and Play Meter's equipment poll. That's very good. Especially the equipment poll, considering these laziest games weren't known for their solid equipment on that. We didn't get any Discord reviews on this, but I did want to mention our buddy and newest member of our channel, Rob Flack O'Hara, mentioned that growing up in his local bowling alley had an impressive arcade that included a set-down Mach 3 cabinet. The bowling alley was within walking distance of my friend's house, and I definitely dropped some money into that machine. It may not have the action Afterburner had, but man, did it look good. I agree with that assessment, Brent. A very attractive game. I looked this up on eBay just for fun, and there's no one selling one of these or selling the boards out of one or selling anything except for like the marquee, which was also going for top dollar. So this one will set you back. It's funny because these games were quite a bit more there were quite a few more of these back in the day that I've seen recently. Let's move on to what you had this week, Brent. You picked a more unusual, very seldom seen title, I think.
Yeah, I certainly wanted to, even though we didn't talk about our choices beforehand, I certainly wanted to look at one of the more action-oriented Laserdisc games. So I went with Interstellar Laser Fantasy. I had never heard of this game until I had just happened to find it in the list, and I normally play all my laser games that I have access to, and I must have just continuously skipped over this. This was made by Funai in 1983, and they still exist today, and they make a lot of Pioneer and sound systems and stuff that they slap other people's names on and ship out the door. They made the game part of this, the actual ship shooting and all that stuff. The background laser disc effects was made by a company called Gacken, who is also still around today. So both of these companies that had a hand in are still working today, and neither of them are still in video games. In Interstellar, you fly the ship named the Fraud Runner, and your mission is to fly to a distant alien spaceship, destroy their base, and then come back home and get saluted and high-fived and everybody's happy, and then do it again. I think the game actually loops like 5 times before it finally says, okay, you've played enough, get out of here. And it's not as much, it's an odd blend between both versions of Mach 3, where you have laser cannons and then you have a ship attachment that will come down and attach to your ship every once in a while and allow you to bomb as well. So it has both games in one. Interstellar is kind of their claim to fame, or what made them unique among shooting games outside of the laser disc aspect, is they had a controller that would rotate 90 degrees. It was twist control. And what that actually did was, normally your ship is shooting straight forward in almost a Space Invaders type configuration, but you could twist your controller and angle your ship 45 degrees in either direction to help you maneuver and shoot at the same time. Now, Aaron, I knew you were saying that you were even up, weren't even aware that this was capable.
No.
In this game. Did you just not use it, or were you twisting and not knowing?
No, well, I mean, I've never played this in an arcade.
Obviously.
And I don't have a joystick that's a twist-type joystick. Now, so what I did notice is that when you move your stick, your ship could occasionally, like, turn, but I just thought it was doing that when you got to a certain part of the screen. I didn't realize you could also sort of go up, too. Which is something
limited, yes.
The maneuverability of this is unusual. Let's just put it that way.
It is. It really is. And the whole aspect of this, it's not Space Invaders because it's not top to bottom action. And it's not, it's almost like a, what would you describe this as, Aaron? Almost like a...
I'll tell you what it reminded me of, okay? Because one thing, when your ship shoots, the bullets arch, right? They're like they're going over horizon. It reminded me if you took like a gyrus and flattened it. That's what this reminded me of. Like you're almost going in almost like a gentle curve at the bottom of the screen, and your ship the bullets arch, and the enemies, you can see them from way, way off, like you can in Gyrus when you're at the bottom of that pit, and then they come forward, so it sort of reminded me of that. And I looked over here, and Wing Chun Wolf said, this is like playing Gyrus with the screensaver on. That's a pretty good assessment, I think, of that. But that's exactly what it reminded me of. I'll be honest with you. I had a cup of coffee with but the gameplay in this is actually right there at the tippy top of Laserdisc games. I mean they actually took some time to put something that resembles a proper shooter into this, in my opinion.
Let's talk about that for a moment. I will have to say that the shooting aspect of this game is fun enough. I don't think it was revolutionary. I don't think it was groundbreaking. I think the angle at which you kind of see this with is kind of neat. However, the laser fantasy part of the game, which is the background, completely tacked on. Unlike Mach 3, where it's relevant to the action screen, and in Interstellar Laser Fantasy, it sometimes kind of looks like you're scooting across the ground, but there are plenty of times where it's just patterns or geometric shapes or waves.
Outlines.
Or just, yeah, wireframe. And it's definitely surreal.
Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of?
No.
Remember the Star Wars Holiday Special?
Yeah.
When Grandpa has on his little headset, Fantasyland?
That part's disturbing.
That's exactly the most disturbing part. So it's like they saw that, which... Actually, I think that came out after this. And then they said, you know what? We should do that, but stick a video game over top of it. And that's what they did. Something to mention about the cabinet of these things. This also had a stand-up and set-down cabinet. And the stand-up cabinet was your standard fare. Your set-down cabinet was a cockpit-style cabinet with this huge glass window in the back so people could watch. And very few of these, the set-down cabinets, survive to this day. It's a really hard find. Apparently, that glass in the back broke all the time when people were either moving it or, you know, just getting rough with it, not in the arcade-type environment. This, Aaron, I don't know if Mach 3 got ported to anything, but this game did get ported.
You're kidding me.
To the MSX,
yeah.
Their laser add-on. And I had a cup of coffee with it, and it's pretty good. Obviously, the gameplay graphics are dumbed down a little bit. They're not quite as sharp. You don't get quite that funky angle like you do in the arcade version. However, the laser part, of course, is dead on. So you can play this on a home console release, sort of. You know, if you have an MSX and the laser attachment, you could fire this right up.
Wait a minute here. The MSX had a laser attachment. I've never heard of this. That's incredible. I'm going to see this.
It was ported to the MSX Palcom in 1985.
Put that on the list.
And they dropped the Laser Fantasy and just called it Interstellar.
Wow. And it kept all the video?
Yeah. The backgrounds were pretty much exact. However, the actual game graphics, they had it dumbed down a little bit.
That's astounding. That's news to me. I gotta check that thing out.
A few other notes worthy on this game. They had planned for the Laser Fantasy service to be a whole brand of gaming. Laser Fantasy was slated for a sequel that never saw the light of day, unfortunately. And then they had other games in the Laser Fantasy realm that also never saw the light of day. Apparently, this game did not do well, or it was not the moneymaker they were expecting. I have a feeling when you had two companies involved making the game, and then both of them wanting a piece of that pie, they were probably expecting to get a bigger piece of pie than they got. The sequel for this game has been... the rebirth, you should say, has been teased online since about 2008. A couple people said that they would like to pick up the project and run with it and make, you know, another Interstellar game, but that has not happened. Overall, Aaron, do you think this game could stand on its own without the laser background.
I think this one maybe. I mean, it's close. This, I thought the gameplay in this was, you know, I've looked at this one because it's got the rep of being trippy, and it is super trippy.
Yeah.
But I mean, the actual combat is not bad. I think having the shots kind of arch over the horizon, it's just a subtle thing, but it makes it, it gives it more depth.
Yeah.
And that adds a lot to it to me. The fact that you can kind of, your ship's kind of real maneuverable is neat. And the fact that the aliens come out in a video game-like fashion. I mean, there's a game here. That's the key element to this. Even more so than Mach 3. I think Mach 3 is a better game. I'll tell you that right now. But I think in terms of gameplay, this is has a lot going for it. I mean, if you look at these games where they overlay graphics onto a video picture, I mean, now let's talk about Vegas Battle as a perfect example. They do it. They put video in front of a game of like shooting game, and the shooting game stinks. It's no good. Like I always thought to myself, they can make this work if they would actually put a good game on top of this footage. And this is as close as I've probably seen to someone actually doing that. You know, I was surprised how much I enjoyed the gameplay in this. It's not an easy game. And part of the problem is that they've got stuff flying in from everywhere. But I like the gyrosy elements where the stuff comes from way off. They did some good, like, scaling or something in this, and it worked. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, the trippy backgrounds, for me, they sort of worked in a weird way. I kind of liked them. They were fun to look at while you were playing. They didn't really have much to do with the game. I could have done without the bombing elements. I didn't think that really added much to the game. You know, I mean, it's something different. It shows you they were trying, but it's not something like that I thought was like particularly awesome. So overall, I could have done without that, but I thought it was pretty neat. You know, it's a very unusual title, and the fact that this got a home release, I'm going to be all over that. That's interesting news.
Well, here's the thing. I think that this game could have been, you could have given it a plain space background, and it would have been a good game.
I think it would have been a pedestrian with the plain space background.
Well, here's my point, though. I think if you're able to do that, I think that makes it a bad Laserdisc game. I think that they did not use the Laserdisc for any potential outside of crazy, wacky backgrounds. And from a gameplay perspective, that's not good enough. That doesn't cut it with me.
Were these backgrounds made specifically for this game?
Yes.
Or did they do it? They were. Okay. Because it looks like someone just went, like, someone, like, kidnapped a bunch of demo programmers and said, do it and get busy. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah. Now, they didn't say, like, you know, we need the ship to line up with this, and we need, you know, we need these to come over the horizon. They didn't do anything like that. It was just like, Here's our awesome Laserdisc stuff that you asked for. And they were like, okay, let's put the game over top of it and have a good time.
They were kind of lazy is what you're saying.
No, I don't think it was lazy. I think it was just two different companies with two different specialities that had never done, you know, hadn't done much video game stuff before, came together and tried to make something. Two other notes I want to mention. When you can continue in this game, and you have to get so far before continuing matters. But I was very amused that if you don't get past stage 4 and the continue screen comes up, normally it says like if you continue, you'll continue at stage 5. If you continue in stages 1 through 4, it comes up and says if you continue, we'll skip the introduction.
Well, there you go.
Which I always thought was a kind of a strange way of wording it. also, with this game, if you ever want a fun, like, funny Japanese to English translation, look up the manual for this game.
Yeah.
It is chocked full of it. I'm not going to go into the examples, although I do have it pulled up here. I'll let you experience on your own. It is quite a funny read if you put it in context, some of the things they're talking about, especially when it comes to laser disc care or just the electricity in general. Good fun stuff. So, Aaron, with that all the way, I think we should move on to the real star of the show. It's the wheel.
Oh, let's do it right now. So, last week we rolled the Retro Rewind, and so we've replaced that with the good old, I was inspired by Boat, I put the good old NES on there, Brent, the good old NES.
Yes.
You have a feeling on anything this week?
You know, I think it's about time we spin one of those locks.
You want to explain those locks real quick?
Those locks are the fallen air, or the fallen Amigo shows, and they're going to stay on that wheel even if they get spun, but apparently they have some kind of anti-spin technology attached to them.
There's a lot of weird stuff.
Please stop. It's very bad for the show.
There's a lot of weird stuff on this wheel. You don't like my dance, the wheel dance?
No, I do not like the wheel dance.
Let's here we go.
Very pedestrian spin.
Well, I'm sorry. Oh, God. What do we got here? Oh, Lord. Okay, it's the Game King. The Game King 1 through 3. That's what you've got written on here. Do you want to explain
game
what
King
the
Game King 1 through 3.
What is the Game King 1-3, Brent?
I believe it's a handheld.
Oh, this is going to be a painful one, isn't it? I have never heard of the Game King. I'll be singing some Counting Crows next week. That's for darn sure, though. So next week, it's the Game King 1-3. Brent, you want to give a shout-out to our long-suffering chat who have endured our various issues today.
Those who have stuck through us through thick and thin today, we got Picard, Pixel at Dawn, Hermsky, Mitsuyama, Duncan Styles, Wing Chung Wolf, Roushi, and I know there was somebody else up here I wanted to shout out, Frodo NL. Some of our lurkers today, we've had Laser Disc. Wow, that's very appropriate. Milton Bradley made an appearance.
Mm.
Hello, sir. I like some of your board games. Retro Faza, and let's do one more shout out to Comrade Two Face. Can't go wrong.
That's
there.
A tough comrade right there.
Real quick, Aaron, an announcement I want to make. We are preparing months in advance for our Thanks for Giving marathon, and we want to extend a invitation to all those who are ARG supporters through anchor.fm. If you have a piece you would like to see on the Thanks for Giving wheel, please, please, please send them to our mail account, argpresents@mail.com. We want to get as many submissions as we can from our supporters. We are going, anyone who supports up to September 1st, you are eligible to make a suggestion, and we are cutting those suggestions off at the beginning of October. That will give us plenty of time to prepare and get everything ready. So if you are a supporter and want to throw a suggestion our way for the Thanks for Giving marathon, please do. Also, if you aren't a member of the ARG Presents family, you can still throw out wheel suggestions for our day-to-day show. Again, that address is argpresents@mail.com. Come give us a suggestion, and we'll see if it gets put on the wheel.
Very good. Very good. One last little piece of business before we go. We have started a new Twitch channel. This is under the ARG banner, but really this is just sort of it's for modern games or games for kids or anything that doesn't fit into the Amiga's normal channel. If you're into that sort of thing, you go over to Twitch, and our channel is called ARG Presents, all one word. So we've got I've played wrestling on there. Me and the boy have played some totally reliable delivery service, and we've played a ton of Dead Before Daylight over there. So plenty of weird, more modern stuff doesn't fit into our normal routine. So if you want to add us up, it's ARG Presents, all one word.
And just for those wondering, no, we will not be doing our weekly show over there.
Right, yeah.
We are still firmly part of the Amigos Retro Gaming Network.
It's under our moniker just to have something to name it effectively.
That's it.
That I can remember. I think that's it, Brent. Let's quit now before we do any more damage. Thanks for hanging with us, everybody. Until next week, wish us luck.
Thanks for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Quick shout out to all of our YouTube subscribers and Twitch followers. A special thank you to Duncan Styles for our vector graphics and Bart Pitt for our amazing music. Would you like to keep ARG spinning for as little as $1 a month? You can do so at anchor.fm/ARG-presents. Supporters get entry into the Amigos Discord channel, as well as their name called out in the credits. Supporters like these fine folks: Anthony Jarvis, Rand W. Betke, Terry Howard, Gary Heather, John Schaller, The Slow Norris, Frodo NL, Steve Rasmussen, Chris Foles, Mitsuyama, Retroalogy, Firmsky, John Deckman, and Jerry Dennington. Don't want to explain another credit card bill? That's okay too. You can help us out by leaving us a positive review on Spotify and Apple iTunes. Have an idea for a wheel piece? Send it to us at argpresents@mail.com. We record live every Sunday at 9 a.m. EDT on Twitch. Hope to see you there.